Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Clubs in Forum, Connect Your Intellect. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum and Twitter at InforumSF. As Aaron said, I'm Violet Blue, blogger, sex educator, podcaster, and author. My new book is The Total Flirt. It's at thetotalflirt.com. You can harass me on Twitter at Violet Blue. And tonight, we are delving into the complex, exciting, and sometimes confusing world of sex and dating in San Francisco. Tonight, we've gathered some of our most awesome local love gurus. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of things, including polyamory, slow sex, being alone, being in tribes, and many other things. Now, way back when dinosaurs roamed the earth in 2007, Forbes did a survey, and we ranked number one in the nation, San Francisco, for being the best place to be single. Last year, we slipped to number three. What happened, you guys? Come on. You should put out more. That's what it is. Or maybe not. But San Francisco is a very interesting and complex place to date and mate and seek other mates. We are a tech hub. We attract writers like crazy. We have the largest BDSM pride event possibly in the United States. We have a huge pride parade. So we have a huge gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender population, a whole lot of tech people, a lot of writers, and a big, fat amount of perverts. And you know those Venn diagrams overlap like crazy. I think that contributes to a little bit of our confusion. So to help us wend our way through that confusion, I'm going to introduce you to the Justice League of Sex and Dating here in San Francisco. Did I make Ethan smile? I did. This is Ethan Waters. He's the co-founder of the San Francisco Writer's Grotto, which is actually a pretty cool thing and a very big deal. He's the author of Urban Tribes, but he's got a new book out that's called Crazy Like Us, Globalization of the American Psyche. We have Sasha Kagan. Did I say your name right? Fantastic. She's the author of Quirky Alone and To-Do List and a product marketing consultant for startups. You can find her on Twitter at Sasha Kagan. We have Nicole Dedone, founder of One Taste and author of Slow Sex and The Art and Craft of the Female Orgasm. Her website is onetaste.us. And finally, N.W. Smith, contributor to the Bold Italic and author of Dateline. So now's our chance to meet them. Let's get started. One question I'd like to throw out to the panel just to get started is, I would like to hear from each of you, and you can go in any order you like, what do you think is particularly unusual about sex and dating in San Francisco, and why? Anyone can start. N.W., I'm going to make you start. I've got the gavel.
Well, I don't know. I think that I haven't lived in very many other places, but what's really unique here is that there's a lot of, I think a lot of young people and a lot of highly educated people. And a lot of people that are really putting off marriage or getting a more serious relationship to just kind of have fun because they're doing a lot of other things, whether it's school or career or something like that. And there's just also a lot of stuff to do for young people in the city. So there's a lot more opportunities for young people to meet each other and see each other out. So
you see it possibly as a generational thing?
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it, and just maybe the culture of the city here and the types of people that are attracted to this area for school or for work.
Ethan, do you have something to say about that?
Well, I think I would go against the premise of the question. I would say that the dating here in San Francisco is actually very similar to a lot of destination cities. And that's the destination city, I mean, like the place you go to after college. And what makes them similar is this remarkable sort of, as N.W. suggested, this remarkable marriage delay among this generation of young adults. We have delayed marriage longer than any generation in American history. The 1950s generation was actually the youngest average marrying age in American history, and it swung all the way to the oldest. That's a remarkable change in just a generation and a half. And it's happening by and large because of what's happening in destination cities and the places where people go after college to develop careers. And I also believe it's happening primarily because of the full integration of women into the workforce. So there are people on this panel that can give you very particular advice, one might say explicit advice about one's love life. I am more of the historical, generational a person. When I told my wife what the panel topic of the panel was, she laughed, and laughed so hard that I thought she was going to hyperventilate. It's one of those laughters where you're not sure whether the person is actually crying or laughing. But I do think it's important to take that generational perspective on one's love life, because I think you can, if you go through 20 years of being single after college, you can look at yourself in the bathroom mirror a lot of times and say, well, what's wrong with me? Why haven't these things worked out in the way I want them to work out? And you forget that you're part of a generational trend and generational movements that actually are making decisions for you, and you are just manifesting those changes.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you and also interject that one of the common stats that's thrown around about San Francisco is that roughly 1 in 4 people identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. So at the fear of accusing you of advancing the heterosexual agenda, I'd like to sort of throw in the mix of your conversation that your answer is incredibly valid for those people who are heterosexually identified and are seeking marriage.
And can get married, right.
Yeah,
yes, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my take on it is a bit influenced by the fact that I've been away from San Francisco for a year, traveling in South America. So for me, certain things that I noticed about San Francisco have just jumped out at me since I've been back. And one of them that I think is quite obvious to everyone is the high participation in online dating, and how, being a tech hub, the stigma has almost entirely faded away in San Francisco. And what goes along with that, I think, is a mentality of marketing yourself online that has sort of infiltrated the way we think about meeting someone for people who participate. And one thing that struck me the other day, I was in Berkeley, I was in a cafe, and I saw a poster for a photographer who is offering social media photography. In a natural, flattering light, here's how to spruce up your online dating profile and increase your chances. So, I mean, I thought, oh, gee, this is a natural niche, but it also just gave me kind of a creepy feeling that we have to hire a professional to take a picture of us in our best light to get a date in the Bay Area. That's weird.
I want to get back to that in just a second. Nicole.
I think for me it's the fact that we're so omnivorous, which you were pointing to. And when that happens...
What do you mean by omnivorous?
There's everything available. There's every single option you could ever imagine available in this city. Where I can... for example, teach about female orgasm. And I can be talking to a tech person. Oh, yeah, I teach female orgasm. And, oh, yeah, they'll say, I'm programming my computer. And it's like an everyday conversation. There's not another city that I can do that in. And
you don't think it would work in Missoula?
I've tried it in other cities. And, the blank expression just washes over. And I think that because of that, I think there's the most potential in this city to create the exact life that you want, to customize your life. And by the same token, I think there's the danger of getting lost in the sea of all of these different options and never actually rooting down and discovering the fundamentals in terms of connection.
So with that thought, I wanted to kind of go back to what you were saying about you got sort of a creepy feeling about people sort of marketing themselves for dating. And how do you think that's different now in terms of, because what you're telling us is that people have an acceptance or a tolerance, not only for sexuality in this city, but for technology in this city mm-hmm. as well. So what do you think is different about that? What do you think has changed? Because you said you were gone for a year and that something had changed. It seems to me that dating has always been sort of a way of marketing yourself.
Hmm. Well, I think it's sped up because so many more people are participating, and I had a conversation with someone about this. It's the feeling of an endless buffet of options, and because more people are in the mix, there's more people to try, and because people don't meet through natural ties that would keep them on their best behavior, there's, just a jumping from one person to the next without exploring at any depth, and I think that tendency, there needs to be a conversation around that tendency in order to keep it in check and to keep people more present and connected and also open to the possibilities around them at the cafe or you know, gas station, wherever.
So speaking to each of your strengths, I'm wondering what each of you think in terms of etiquette for sex and dating. You, Ethan, with your book about urban tribes, it seems to me that different types of etiquette, so basically what you've posited, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that people in urban situations sort of move around in tribes, and that dating has its own particular challenges in when you start to see it in terms of tribes. And I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that and talk to me a little bit about what type of sex and dating etiquette one could have to try and get out of their tribe.
So once upon a time, you would have your family vet your potential mate. Your family would find the mate, and your parents or brothers or sisters would vet them to see if they were appropriate for you, if they were the right person. When you get to 33 and you live in San Francisco and you've lived out of your house for over a decade, your parents no longer do that for you, and your brothers and sisters are not around to do that for you. And we rely on our friendships groups to do that, which I think is extremely important and valuable. When we are in the first rush of a romance, it's very easy to lose our heads. And the friend's input is important, with one, I think, caveat, which is that unlike those parents and brothers and sisters, friends have a vested interest in keeping you single oftentimes.
Yes.
They have, especially when you have an urban tribe, this group of friends that has evolved in your life, has all this meaning behind it, has 10 years of momentum. You've gone to Burning Man 8 times together. That's a real thing. That's what Robert Putnam missed when he wrote that book called Bowling Alone, where he said we lost our social capital. That's where our social capital is. But those friendships, they can get jealous of that new person. It can be very difficult for that new person to come within the friendship group and not pose a threat to other people. So I think the etiquette, I think it largely has to do with how you introduce your new mate to your friendship group, whether you throw them into the boiling water or whether you introduce them carefully and slowly over time. Or the other option is simply to turn away from your friendship group for a time and invest only in that relationship to see if it can grow into something that is comparable to the thing you might ultimately move away from.
Ethan, what advice might you give to someone who is dating someone who's in another tribe and their tribe or circle of friends doesn't like the person that they're dating?
Well, this happens all the time, and it can be really, I don't know if you know this from your audience, but it can be really vicious when the mm-hmm. friendship group turns on the person. I think in all the cases I've seen where the friendship group really viciously turns on the person, the friendship group actually wasn't just acting jealously. They had a good reason mm-hmm. that they were trying to protect this person, this friend, from this predator. So I think oftentimes when it goes the worst, it's actually the red flags are the most, and you should be willing to see those red flags as the person that is involved. But I think what I did when I got married and I made this transition, it was just around the time I published Urban Tribes, ironically. I basically made the decision to leave the friendship group for a while, to step out.
To leave your own tribe.
To leave it, to not be the center of the tribe, to not be the person that was throwing the parties for a while, to invest in this thing to see where it went before I then tried to reintegrate it with the group.
Interesting. I'm going to change the channel, but stay on the subject of etiquette and skip down to NW, because NW, one of your secret superpowers is that you did an experiment, am I right, where you tried a variety of different digital dating sites.
Yeah, but prior to that, I'd never gone on an online date. I didn't even have Facebook. I mean, I just wasn't completely unfamiliar. I know. I do now. I know. It's crazy. I just was completely unfamiliar with the process. And I remember the first date that I did from OkCupid. At the very end, I didn't really know how to kind of end it because normally you would have met this person before. You might know this person through friends and, I'll see you around, obviously. But this person I probably was never going to see again. And I was kind of trying to figure out a way to kind of end it amicably. And the girl just said, "This is your first time doing this, right?"
Oh, no.
Kind of let me off the hook. She said, just shake hands and, if you have my information. So...
Did you have any hard lessons of etiquette when you were cruising the dating scene in different dating sites? I'm trying to get some nuggets of advice out of you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one thing I think is that it depends on the channel you're going through. When I start out, using Craigslist, which I just quickly found out, I guess nobody does anymore. But
not for that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, exactly right. Exactly right. I think for some of the online dating sites, I think maybe coming with too much information to begin with, kind of like messaging the person with like a few paragraphs, asking them a bunch of questions. I think that's probably a no-no, which I realized was, you know, didn't work out too well. So,
what worked for you when you were communicating with people? Obviously, well, not obviously, but I'm assuming this was a heterosexual exchange.
It was.
So, what was it that women did when you were messaging them that caught your eye or that you found was something that worked particularly well?
You know, I think that the one girl that messaged me that I ended up dating for a while, she just kind of surprised me and came right out and just said, "Hey, you know, you seem cool. Do you want to go for a drink right now?" And I thought it was a terrible idea, but it was kind of spontaneous and romantic in a way. So
Aww.
So I did it. And
so it was direct well. And it was surprising. And
yeah, kind of didn't seem calculated and kind of artificial like some of the other you know exchanges felt during that.
That's interesting because I've, in doing research for the book that I just wrote, I saw that a lot of the results on research were that in situations of dating and flirting and pulling, as they call it in Britain, they found that women almost always made the first move almost all of the time, even when men felt that they had made the first move. So that's pretty interesting.
Wow.
So what I want to ask, Nicole.
Yes.
Since we're talking about sex and sexuality, and since we have such a buffet of choices in San Francisco, obviously that's one of the wonderful attractions of our city, I'm wondering what thoughts you might have on sexual etiquette when people are out dating in the wild.
I think...
Because for you, obviously, it's part of your lexicon, it's part of your job, so you can. It's part of who you are as you talk. So when someone meets someone new... What's a good way for them to find out if there's a match there of some kind?
So I'm really simple. And, you know, one of the things I discovered, I lived in these different places where we were practicing orgasm for, like, hours a day. And the world is
with
very...
Sting?
Pardon?
With Sting.
He'd come in every now and then, play a tune. And then I discovered the world's very different when you feel. And the laws and the rules are very different when you're walking around like a raw nerve ending. And so the place where I would have etiquette would be at a really fundamental place. And I looked at the underlying ways that we can communicate no matter where we are. And the one thing that I discovered that held true no matter where I was stay connected no matter what. Stay connected in the communication, follow it all the way to the end, actually make it through the difficult feelings, and then tell the truth. And telling the truth is a lot more challenging than not lying. So telling the truth entails speaking what's actually inside of you in the moment to the person, and it's a lot riskier. And so I think at the most basic level, what I would say would be to communicate to increase connection rather than decrease sensation, which I think is often what we do.
And, of course, the awesome risk of telling the truth and asking for what you want in bed is that you might get it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And then the last thing I would say is just learn safe words. That's one of the things that we do in all of our classes. The first thing we do is introduce people to red, yellow, and green and say, if you feel uncomfortable about what I'm talking about, just say yellow. If we hit a definite let's stop talking here, just say red. And it's a really great way to begin to open these conversations up because everything otherwise is in the dark, under the covers, never spoken about, and then we're totally supposed to know how to do it.
So this is in the context of in-the-moment sexual negotiation.
Yeah.
Okay. Sasha, I want to ask you about etiquette because you wrote Quirky Alone, and this is about wanting to be alone rather than being in a crappy relationship. Am I right?
Kind of, yeah.
And that's really cool. And so what I'm wondering, and my specific question for you about etiquette, though I think you have some other thoughts about what we've been talking about, but my specific question for you about etiquette is, what if you start dating someone and you go out on a date with someone and you decide that you do want to be alone after all? And what is the etiquette for getting through that gracefully? Whether it's from, you know, knowing that you want to go home alone that night from the beginning of the date to the end of the date, or maybe even sleeping with them and the next morning going, I think I just want to do my own thing. What would be good etiquette for staying quirky alone?
Well, you could still be quirky alone even if you completely hooked up with that person, just to clarify.
Okay.
Because you can be quirky alone and married.
Please correct.
But I think that that's a really good question and a difficult one. And I don't know if I have the perfect answer. I think that the best thing to do is to acknowledge what was there and what you appreciate about that person. And I too agree with being as honest as possible and acknowledging what was good, and then maybe, also lightly saying what's not there. And not in a hurtful way, but as truthfully as you can be, because I think that what's really most painful is when people just disappear.
But that's often easiest for people because they don't know what to say or do.
Yeah, people have no idea how to communicate. I mean, it's this courage to be truthful that is needs to be developed.
Is there something more that you'd like to see in etiquette in terms of sex and dating in San Francisco?
I'd like to see more eye contact, just out and about. You know, I mean, I get depressed sometimes if I'm on the bus and everyone is looking at their iPhone.
That's how geeks flirt, though.
Yeah.
I know someone that I was chatting with recently made a funny joke about Foursquare and that it's checking in to check out. That, you know, basically there's all this, like, you're with someone. Here I'm with Ethan at this restaurant and, you know, telling everyone that I'm not with where I am, that I'm with him. So it's like checking in to check out kind of thing. Just more presence, you know. I just feel that in the places where I travel, there's like this vitality of presence, of eye contact, of really being there. And sometimes I just don't feel that on the streets of San Francisco.
So one of the things I'm wondering, just off the top of my head, NW, which service did you like the best?
I basically used OkCupid, Craigslist, and then I did like a meetup. And I think OkCupid was had the most success with, and it was the format was, I think, the easiest to navigate. And I think there's just like more cool people on it than Craigslist for dating.
Okay. Really?
Not buying furniture.
So what's interesting, too, about San Francisco, and I think a lot of you probably have noticed this if you've lived here for a while, and that's that we're very broken into neighborhoods, and people have strong allegiances to neighborhoods, and a lot of people just don't get out of their neighborhoods or leave their neighborhoods very often. So one thing I'd like to ask each of the panelists is environment, about environment and location. So I'm wondering what in San Francisco would be a good place for a first date, a good place for a blind date, or a good place to go and meet people cold. And I'm wondering why on each of these. You don't all have to answer them. You're married. But in San Francisco, you know.
Well, okay, here's just a general observation. I think people are more natural in a natural environment. So maybe just...
What do you mean by natural?
Like, I wouldn't want to go on a hike with someone outside of San Francisco because that's scary.
Yes.
But I do think that people are more themselves outside of a bar or something that's very cliche and typical. And on a hill, Bernal Hill, I don't know, something... even wilder than that, but I don't know the perfect answer, but wilder but safe, like where you actually feel more like yourself.
So you're saying getting them out someplace, like into a park, like Golden Gate Park, Dolores Park, to maybe get to know them better or to get them out of context?
Yeah. I also have this idea that doing activities together is better, that this whole like sitting and having a conversation is like really boring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Unless you're talking about sex and dating.
Cool. I like going on dates in Fisherman's Wharf.
Why?
It's like my least favorite neighborhood, but it's just so weird and fun because I mean everything there.
Hooters?
You feel like a tourist first of all in your own city. It's a place that you know nobody that lives here actually goes, so it's kind of you know it's new and exciting and it's yeah. There's just so much to kind of laugh at and yeah. talk about there that I don't know I've had
fun. I think that's a good idea in Alcatraz.
Yeah.
I think you should just go all the way.
That's the red, green, yellow discussion.
I don't know if I have a neighborhood, but I have places.
Like, yeah, I want places.
Okay, so I would definitely go to Opaque Restaurant, which is in the dark. And
is it the one that's completely dark?
It's completely dark. You can't see anything. Why would I go there?
Yeah, for what kind of date?
Maybe not a first date.
Maybe not
a
first date.
But actually, I might
like
even
blind
go for
date,
a first
perhaps?
Date. But I like experiencing people in different ways. I would also take them to Audium, which is this really, I don't know if anybody's ever been there, but it's this really trippy sound wall place. And you get to see like the child in someone, somebody without all the layers of impressing you, and or the Exploratorium, different like tactile or sound, so that you get to access a different part of that human being and then have an experience with them.
Do you have anything to add?
I can tell you, back when I was dating many years ago, that I did have one first or second date, which was Rodeo Beach. You can go, you know, which is just the first beach north of the Golden Gate Bridge. There's actually carnelians that you can find, this little semi-beautiful, little semi-precious stone, the very bright orange stone. Mm-hmm. They're actually, you can find them in the sand of varying diameters, so you can go there and look for a carnelian. So I'm a big outdoor activity person. Takes the pressure off. You're doing something together.
Now, what I think is interesting is what you didn't mention, each of you. None of you mentioned cafes. You all seemed averse to bars. Mm. Why is this?
It's overdetermined. It's been, I mean, you've had, if you've been out dating for any amount of time, you've had those dates. And for me, like, it's hard to feel excited. Like, I met this woman when I was traveling who had a really fascinating strategy around dating. I'll just briefly describe it. She was having men fly her back from Argentina to California for first dates. And her idea was that you had to fully believe in the possibility and fully make it romantic.
The possibility of what? Sex? Or just a
She was looking
true
for
love?
Her forever best friend,
okay.
as she called it. But without asking someone to fly me to another continent, to actually do something interesting and creative, it just gives it more of a spark than, I don't want to go and get a drink. I mean, to me, it's just not, it doesn't inspire me.
Okay. Were there any reasons?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's kind of been there, done that. I think if it fits into an overall night of experience, mm-hmm. then it's great, or a way to wind down. But I think there's so much in this city. It's such an incredible place to be that it's by the book is kind of boring.
I think that especially for first dates or blind dates or online dates, I think bars are actually really great because it's not dinner, it's not an activity that you're committed to the whole time. So if it goes horribly, just, you know, you can keep it to one drink and then, oh, I forgot I had some something to do.
Crashed.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways it can be pretty useful.
Also, there's if they're drinkers, there's the inhibition lowering atmosphere, there's alcohol. Which I would argue also is for people who are non-drinkers, that what the three of you mentioned, talking about going outside and sort of getting outside of the usual space, I noticed that in each of the three of your answers, the inhibition-lowering factor wasn't alcohol, it was a shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, most people in San Francisco, though, however, do end up going to bars and going to cafes and kind of hoping that these are the places that they're going to meet people, if they're going to meet people in person or in real life.
I think it's the predate. There should be like a clear structure that's the predate, and then the date is something more inspiring.
I'd agree.
I'm going to throw each of you a curveball now. I want to know, I want to know what each of your advice would be to someone who sees a totally hot stranger and wants to go up and say something to them. What do you do? Freeze. Okay, we'll come back to it.
It shows how completely retarded we are.
I'm going through my pickup lines in my head.
All right.
I think you know, you should. It's hard because people just don't do that often, and I think a lot of women in particular, especially if it's a man comes up and starts talking to them, you know, on the bus stop or something, they're maybe a little bit hesitant to kind of engage with that person because it's just not that common. But mm-hmm. I think if you approach somebody in the right way and are, you know, friendly and nice, I think, yeah.
All right, well, what's the inverse then? What could someone come up and say to each of you, or how would you like to be approached by a total stranger?
I think it's almost anything, and the point is to do it. I mean, I think it can be a compliment on your sweater. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
That's a great answer.
It really doesn't. I had a guy, this is how I started my whole life practice, was I had a guy say, would you like to try a sexuality practice? And I was going to move into the Zen Center and be celibate, and it worked. So I don't know necessarily, you know, that it matters what you say. I think it matters that you say it with conviction.
I mean, the absolute stranger thing is it really does throw one for a loop. But I think if you put yourself into situations where you're not an absolute stranger in the situation, there, so you're in a place where you have a certain number of friends at the party, will give you a certain amount of confidence that you'll carry to that stranger. Or if you're in another work situation, or you're taking a class or something, you're someplace where you have some grounding about who you are and what you have to offer. Then when that stranger comes along, it's not like they're walking past you on the street. There's a context by which you can engage that person. So I think maximizing the number of situations where you have some degree of confidence in yourself and you have some set of social backing is really the difference.
So that's, and that totally parlays into the tribes.
Because
you're already there with your friends for a reason.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's this famous social psychology paper by a guy named Granovetter down in Stanford. It's called The Strength of Weak Ties. And he posits that your friends, everyone has a certain set of friends, and when you're trying to do something difficult in the city, like find a mate or find a job or find a place to live, that your friends will always share the meaningful information with you. But if you have three friends, it's likely that they don't have a lot of information, and it's likely that the information they have is duplicated among them. So his theory was that the people that really do well in big cities, jobs, careers, mates, are people that have big, large connections of weak ties. So the weak tie in your social network is the friend of the friend, the friend of the friend of the friend. And that you can light up these networks when you need a particular piece of information, when you're looking for that job or when you're looking for that mate. And that's really the way to solve difficult social problems in an environment that is really deeply complex and with a problem that's as complex as finding a mate. So we maximize, I think this generation, I wrote about that paper just before Friendster started. And then, of course, this generation proved itself to be extremely interested in this network of weak ties because now we can see them on our networked friendship groups. We can see those who our friends of friends are. And I think we really do understand that that's the value, and I think that's the value of the urban tribe, is the large group of friends actually connects to the large group of weak ties, which is where the information is that we need to gather when we try to solve one of these problems.
So that said, in practical terms, I'm wondering what you would think would be the best way for someone to meet somebody.
The best way for someone to meet someone is a friend of a friend, without a doubt. And I know this anecdotally in my own life with my friends. It is the friend of the friend that comes into the social network that has been a little bit vetted because they are that friend of a friend. And you know them a little bit already, and the idea of going into the bar and walking up to the stranger, I just don't know of that happening very effectively ever, or very rarely. It's not a never thing, but rarely. It's the friend-a-friend network that is the key to your success in your social, in your dating life.
Sasha, I see you nodding.
I'm just thinking about examples of people I know who have married through that method. And I'm also blaming my friends. Just
Does anyone disagree? I'm wondering if anyone else, because I'm thinking that's not the only way to meet people in San Francisco.
Well, for me, I think the old-fashioned advice that I would get is just go do things that you enjoy, that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really true. I mean, I remember there was a New York Times story that aimed to disprove this theory by saying that hobbies draw all people of the same sex. And I sort of took that on and was like, yeah, it doesn't work. But I think it actually does.
Yeah, well, certainly not in San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, we are so fortunate that we have so many pools of like-minded people that gather. You know, we have the BDSM community, we have the Spirit Rock community. Anywhere you want to go, you can find like-minded people, and then you can take it, you can put it together in different ways. It's incredible.
What about you, NW? You're our digital dater here that we know about.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that the one successful relationship that I had from this experience was ended up being a friend of a friend. I mean, when I met the person, it ended up that we had friends in common. And I think that there is a lot to that. But I think that the inverse of that is that sometimes it can be a problem when if you know that too many people in that same circle, people have already kind of dated each other to the point where it's become a little bit too incestuous, and you know, everyone either you know is in a relationship with somebody, or they already know that it's not going to work out with that person. It becomes difficult to try and branch out and expand that circle. So.
Would you all give the same advice to someone who just moved here and didn't have a circle of friends? Because we have a lot of transitory people coming through San Francisco and people moving here to start new lives. So what about the people who don't have those circles of friends? How would they go about meeting people in San Francisco?
They could come here. I think you can find communities. I mean, that's what's so cool. Like with the Guardian and the Weekly, and there are so many different experiences you can have, and it's so easy to meet people. I remember when I first moved here, going to the Castro and then going to artists, ATA, and there were just so many different environments to meet people. And then when they start to overlap, then it feels like you know people. We're such a small city. We're a tribal city.
And I would say, I just want to underscore the advice I gave about finding your passions, because I think that when you try a more rational approach through online dating, what gets lost is passion. And I remember I had this funny conversation with a friend in Brazil who's like, I think a relationship has to be 70% passion. And this is what makes it stick. And I've just always noticed about San Francisco, like, why does nothing stick? You know, like somehow it's so hard to get past three dates or something like that. And I think what's missing is passion. And then if you go out and find what you're passionate about, at least that person is observing you in your most glowing state. You're most alive, and that person is too, and that's who you want to be.
None of you are saying to use dating services. Why is this?
I mean, I guess I had you know, ups and downs with my experience, but ideally, I think that it's better to meet somebody through a friend or in a more old-fashioned situation. I don't know. I mean,
why? What's the downside to digital dating? For you, at least.
You know, I honestly felt like it was very difficult to tell what kind of, how the person is actually going to be in real life based on what their profile is, because of what we've been talking about, this marketing the people are putting forth. And it's the same with Facebook and a lot of other things. They put forth this kind of, you know, image of themselves, you know, idealized or what they want people to know or think about them. And it's just a facade. It's not really necessarily who the person really is, what they actually look like, and how they kind of actually are when you meet them in person. So, you know, sometimes it can be a little less than genuine.
Do you think that there are strategies that people can use to get past that in a digital dating situation?
I don't know. I didn't use any of them. I just kind of, you know, threw up a couple of funny pictures of myself and put a couple of funny lines in my profile, and you know, just hope that people were interested. It's difficult to kind of really put to summarize a person in a little in a couple of captions and pictures. I don't know.
I have two tips. One is that you have to take it more seriously and write really honestly about who you are and what you want and get very clear about it. And then number two is go out with very few people.
Very few people?
Yeah.
Why
only
is that?
Because it's a big waste of time, mostly. I mean, it has to be like this. This was like another insight of the last year. Just you have all these things when you're traveling. Like if it's not a total yes, it's a no. And it has to be that way to go meet a stranger. Like, there has to be something about it that's like, wow, I'm really intrigued. And this at least keeps some excitement and optimism.
So there should be like a personal rule, in a way?
A personal rule for yourself?
Yeah, in general, as far as advice for dating. If it's not yes, then get out of there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking specifically about online dating. There might be more gray area in meeting someone out and about, but you have to filter with online dating. And I think that it's better to be really clear and put the effort into your profile and then have very high standards for actually meeting someone.
One second. I just want to let everyone know, in 5 minutes, we're going to go to questions. So if people want to start lining up at that microphone, we will be happy to take your questions. Nicole?
I happen to love all things digital. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I love living in Silicon Valley. And I do think, though, that it hasn't quite hit the cool quotient yet, that we haven't quite stepped over. I have a friend who works for one of the major online dating services, and he was saying the problem that they face is that most people who go to online dating sites go because they perceive that that their dating is a problem. And that's the one piece that they can't work in the background to have it be that people are going because it's fun, it's an experiment, they're learning to actually work with digital stuff, there's this whole other world that's available. It's kind of like that it's a problem. And I think there's this other element where we present ourselves as being so polished, and it's almost like, you know, like meeting someone, you know, holding your breath in, like, so that you look really thin and then you never get to exhale. I think there's this way that we haven't quite had it become real or tangible or palpable enough.
Yeah, I have this idea called radically honest online dating.
Nice.
And I wrote a blog post about it. And yeah, it was basically like unflattering photos. My latest thought was video your therapy sessions. And it's all about finding the problem that works with your problem.
Yeah. All of your recovery groups that you're in.
Dating via processing. So I liked what you said about the personal rule of if it's not yes, then it's no, then you should just bail out and find something else. I'm wondering if you have anything in terms of what you would recommend for people for exit strategies when they're out on dates and they're like, this is a no. Besides, I got to go to the bathroom. I mean, do you just say it flat out? I'm not feeling this and I've got to go. The problem is that I think some people might react with hostility from the rejection.
I don't think people would be hostile, but I think it might cause pain.
I mean,
I read these like amazing online dating tips recently from this coach, and he suggested that you should only schedule a first date for half an hour.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was a little unrealistic, but I mean, there would already be an expectation that it's only half an hour. So then, okay, see ya. I mean, it's almost like speed dating in a way.
Right.
But, you know,
so it's
possibility.
DIY speed dating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But not as efficient.
What exit strategies did you have?
Yeah, I mean, I was going out during the week for a lot of these. So, yeah, well, I have to get up early in the morning for work. I think that's a pretty easy one. But, you know, and it was true, so. But I think a lot of times, especially with online dates, there's really not a lot invested for either person, so I don't think it's that big of a deal to kind of say, hey, this just isn't working out for me. Because, you know, you've only been with the person for 20 minutes talking or half an hour, and they probably aren't going to be that hurt, you know. I think that's probably okay.
So that would be the plus side of digital dating.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Expectations are already lowered.
Right.
So I think, are we going to go to questions now? Great.
So on the subject of online dating, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot for the last, like, 3 months or so. In fact, I'm in the process of trying to figure out the right way to do online dating. So it's a pretty large industry. There's a lot of money in it. It's also an industry where the most reliable study that I know of cites about a 30% satisfaction rate. And actually, this panel is actually roughly there. Three of you are pretty down on it. One of you is lukewarm. So I think that adds up to about 30%. So I think a big problem of this is that the existing players are pretty bad. So if we look at OkCupid, which is the darling of the industry right now, it's a site where men spam women. And I apologize for the heteronormative bias here. I have no idea what it's like in the LGBT community. But essentially, even in a city where there are more women than there are men, men tend to send messages to, like, the top 3% in terms of looks. And those women receive a ton of messages, which they're disinclined to reply to because they're a variant of, like, hey, baby. Or, yes, you ladies who are on OkCupid, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So then the other third of the messages that get sent out are like templates because the guy realizes, okay, there are very few replies. I'm going to send as many things, and he pre-writes a paragraph, doesn't read her profile, sends out these messages.
I'm going to cut you to the question.
Okay, the question is, what's the ideal? Like, the problem is that the current sites are bad. Do you have an opinion on how to improve the experience so that it's not a matter, like, how would you map the things that you think work in real life to an experience which happens on the internet?
I noticed a site that I thought was interesting, What About We, where the whole structure is about activities.
How about we?
I think their name is really terrible because you can't remember it. Like, it's impossible. But I thought the idea is good because it's not all this sort of endless self-description. It really cuts to the chase, and it's creative. It's, let's do this fun thing. So at the very least, you get to have this experiential activity that we've been talking about.
Well, back when I was following this a little bit, this was back a long time ago, but Match.com was the darling of the industry at that point.
They just bought OkCupid.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So they were trying to, and I don't know if this is true anymore, you can tell me, but whether they were trying to sort of put in a little bit of this social network into the site. That is, you had friends write things for you, so you had testimonials from friends on the site, and there also was mechanisms to, I may be making this up, but there should be mechanisms by which you were more easily connected to the people that know people that you know. That is, so it manifests your weak ties a little bit. So you're dating through your weak tie network, but you're just doing it electronically. So I would get a social network graduate student in there and have them use those social networks to make those sites more like what happens in real life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that the problem with spamming with OkCupid is that, yeah, that anybody who's not even remotely kind of a good match according to their algorithms they use, but it's, they can send messages to whoever they want. I think there should be a way to kind of filter the messages and relate it to people that are either more like-minded or connected in a type of social network.
I have a very brief response to that. There have been attempts to use Facebook, Friends of Friends, in order to do this. They have failed. No one wants to take responsibility for introducing people. Thank you.
So I just want to point out that we have probably about 13 minutes left for questions, so we're going to go lightning round with these questions. So please ask a question, and please answer swiftly.
I've been in San Francisco 4 years. I go out a lot. I've had my name because I had to download an email, and my name went on Facebook. My experience is that I get a lot of play from females, 30 plus or minus 5 years. I'm old enough to be their grandfather. But I do get the play, and I have a 33-year-old son. And I go out with him, and I tell him to get the numbers. Now, what I'm really curious about is when a woman makes a heavy play for me, and then I track her down, she disappears. I have never seen such. I was born and raised in Fresno. I spent half my life in Southern California, Orange County. and it was like heaven. My heyday was in the 70s and 80s, and I'm used to that, and I'm used to women being stronger-minded and not so skittish. The females in San Francisco that I have come across, they come on to you really hard, but you can't close them. I'd like to know what that's about in San Francisco. They talk hot, they act hot, they look hot, but they don't close. Now, I want to make a comment. One of your earlier comments was that ladies, you're not going to have any fun having sex, and I've had my share. The woman picks her mate. Now, my experience in San Francisco is they pick me, but they don't know how to close me. I'd like to have that addressed.
Anyone?
Well, I think it's a really interesting comment in terms of there is something about San Francisco that it appears to be open, like sexually open and, you know, experiment, and there are all these communities and there's this thing you're doing with orgasms over there. And it all seems, but in reality, it's the etiquette in all those settings is very intricate and very hard to enter from the outside and understand it. And I've always felt left out of those. I've never was invited to the parties that you know where that stuff went on. But it's this weird dual message that it's like, oh, we're so open and everything's going on here in San Francisco, and yet nothing's going on.
I'm the guy that wrote Loosen the Women Up on the board outside.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Nicole, we need to run through this fairly quickly, but what advice would you give to get my friend laid? Obviously, he's not having a problem getting the lady.
Now, understand. You have to make the cut. I've been with some pretty sophisticated
women. He's made the
women.
Cut, clearly.
I mean, my first thought is, I teach sexuality and I teach women's sexuality, and I have so many men come in and say, you know, like, all I want is to get my hands on a woman. I want a woman. I want a woman. And then you actually have a woman who's authentically turned on and the men run. So I'd be interested to see what actually transpires. But my thought is, if you're doing so well in the beginning when you aren't going after her, then just don't make that shift and go after her. I mean, my guess is she is enjoying the fact that she can go after you. And then when you actually turn around and come after her, she takes off.
That's my point. It's a game. Okay. They're skittish. They're not closers.
I'm getting a prompt for the next question. So thank you so much.
Hi. So I'm a little nervous, like on a first date, but I've lived here for about 3 years, and I've closed the deal a lot with people on with people on Craigslist and OkCupid and, you know, you name it. And I've realized that I don't really want to close the deal very often. I really want a partner. And I found myself kind of going from one extreme to another of being really open and ready and excited easily by random people, but then also now wanting, like, really mainstream relationship, you know, baby by maybe 35. Is that too much to ask? You know? So I get too serious, I think. And I'm wondering what your advice is in this pool for, like, letting people know that what I want is something long-term and serious, but staying fun and happy and light in the midst of it, because there's so much going on.
Any quick answers to that?
I have advice. My advice is gradient dating. There is this way that, I hear people dating, and it's sort of like, either you're the one or you're out of there. And we don't actually take the time to really get to know someone. And I have so many women come in and they say like, oh, I started dating someone. I totally love him. He's the one. And then he's out of there. And I think there's a way that we can actually look at it like getting to know other human beings and actually practicing connection. And then it naturally transpires rather than walking in with this huge agenda that someone feels as you sit down at the table.
So you're, to paraphrase, coming in with all agendas.
Yeah.
And seeing if one fits.
Yeah.
I just want to add one thing is that you're only looking for one person. So I think that with online dating, you can feel like, oh, I have to be popular. I have to say something that's going to please a lot of people so I can get emails and feel validated by that. But you can, I think part of it is letting go of that, and you're just looking for one person. So I think it is good to be specific about what you want.
You also have to watch out for the stall, which is common among dating in our generation, which is that you get to sort of the, especially if you move in together, you hit a stall. You know, men are oftentimes quite happy with the stall. It can go on for 5-10 years, you know, where you just sort of hit this point and you're living together and you're monogamous, but you're not progressing to, you know, getting married or having children or whatever, making a lifelong commitment. And so I think, you know, keeping an eye, you know, I had a friend that once told me that he had a 3-3-3 lesson. It was that 3 months you needed to be in love, at 6 months you needed to be going, you know, a couple, and in 9 months you needed to be on the road towards the thing you really wanted. And if you let it, any of those periods sort of go too long, that you could be in trouble. You could waste a lot of time.
Interesting.
Time is precious.
Thank you. One quick interesting stat that I've read also is that if you're actually interested in someone, you should let no more than 2 days go by before contacting them. After 2 days, interest begins to wane. I think that's interesting. What's your question, sir?
Well, first I want to thank the moderator, at least, for trying to make it a little bit less a super straight club in here.
Cool. Thank you.
And so I don't know exactly what responses I'll get from this, but in the last, you know, year and a half or so for a certain part of the city, sex and a little bit of dating has changed a lot. And so I'm wondering what any of your thoughts are on services like Grindr that have, at least within a certain segment of the community, really changed, you know, some old behaviors that used to happen at, like, Buena Vista Park or someplace like Eros and now happens on the bus instead.
Yeah, and Starbucks.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Any comments?
I think they have Grindr for straight people too, and I don't know anything. I don't know anything about it. I mean, the only feedback I've heard is from gay male friends, and they're kind of just think it's a little bit. I don't know, and maybe a little. Just they're not into it. It's a little too much, I think. But I don't think they tended to go like cruise at parks anyway. So I don't know whether that's, you know, kind of a similar thing.
For people who are wondering what we're talking about, Grindr is an iPhone application that is basically sort of like a it's a location-based check-in app that one can join. Grindr, it's male-focused for hooking up with other guys, and it lets you know who is nearby, basically. So you're a block from Starbucks, and, you know, these three hot profiles pop up of guys who are at Starbucks and might be looking for a little play. And Grindr, from what I've seen in the community, has gone through a very high level of interest and is now dropping off quite a bit, which I think is really interesting. And at the same time that Grindr's been watching it sort of taper a little bit, they're interested in rolling out a Grindr for straight people. And also there was another company that tried to roll one out too, called Pinpoint Sex. And they faced a lot of different challenges trying to sort of make that model work for the heteronormative communities, not as much the lesbian communities who are very interested in it, but the thing that they were trying to do specifically with the heterosexual joins was monetize that and make people pay to exchange messages. So they sort of set up their own barrier, so it became hard to assess whether or not that would actually work.
The rules are different between...
The rules are extremely different. That's the thing.
People.
Exactly. And I'm wondering if you can speak to why that is. I know I have my ideas.
I would say from the outset, I think that the power sharing is very, very different. If you are a man approaching a man, that there's the same level of, like, victimization, the idea that you're going to be victimized, it doesn't really exist in the same way. And that same gender relationships and approaches are, from the outset, much more equitable. And I think that within at least the gay male community, from which I can speak of, there's a greater tolerance and much more acceptance about going up and being approached and going up and talking to someone. And there's this long history of cruising or like the eye contact or being able to tell who is part of your tribe while you're out on the street, especially if you're not out or that's not an obvious thing.
There's a language, there's a lexicon, there's a means of behavior, there's protocol, there's physical signals. And the reason I'm making all of the heterosexual people sit through this is because it's important, because you're here in San Francisco and this goes on all around you. And a lot of my straight male friends are like, God, I wish I was gay. It would just be so much easier to get laid. And it's true in a lot of cases. And that's why.
Thank you.
Do we have time for another question? Okay.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm really happy that we're having this conversation. I'm actually a dating coach here in San Francisco.
Hey.
And a lot what I see is actually a loneliness. And I think a lot of people are feeling a lack of community. Where do I go besides a bar? You know, if I go to a yoga studio, everyone leaves right afterwards. If I go to a cafe, everyone's on their iPhone. It's like people are looking, are so looking for connection. And what happens is they really, they want the relationship, but they're willing to settle for sex. They're willing to settle for the connection for the evening. But what happens is become more and more distracted. There's less and less of what we really want. So I don't know if any of you want to speak to that, of what you've noticed with your research, or any ideas for helping people to feel more connected, more sense of community, and less actually lonely.
I can, if no one else has anything. Sorry. Well, I just got done doing a ton of research on this. So one of the things that I noticed that emerged in the research was that there were three primary things that contributed to people flirting and hooking up and getting together, specifically in situations. It's like you said, if your passion is yoga and you go to the yoga studio, the only person you're going to kind of connect with is the teacher. The three things that they noticed were sociability, inhibition-lowering things, and shared interests. And sociability talked about specifically, I call it the CIS test. And you can do the CIS test on any location that you go to in any situation that you're in. And the more CIS a place has, the more you're probably going to get something. So really quickly, sociability is the physicality of location. So this has very poor sociability because we're all sitting in chairs and we're all facing forward. If we were in a bar situation where everyone was standing and mingling, or a party where there was a snack table and there was something over here to do and there were some video games, that would be really, really good sociability. So that increases your ability to talk to strangers. And then inhibitions, is there something that is sort of an equalizer that is lowering everyone's inhibitions? Alcohol is one of them. Also shared activities such as video games, which again gets to the end of it, which is shared activities. So like taking pictures together is something that lowers inhibitions. So anything where people are joining and doing things together where strangers have to sort of talk to each other, or they relax for some reason, like it's a really embarrassing 80s dance party, you know, and everyone's got to wear these funky costumes. That is an inhibition-lowering situation. And that was what some of you were talking about, also about getting outside and getting out of context. And then shared interests, such as going to meetups and things like that, where you are with other like-minded people, i.e. crossing over with people in your tribes. So that's my response. Does anyone else?
I think, you know, Freud said that which isn't integrated is exaggerated, and I think it's true both in sex and in dating. And I think, you know, we have these exaggerated versions of all of these ways of relating because we lack the fundamental skill of knowing how to connect. And that's where I think we would do well to just begin to take some of that stuff off and get back down to some of the basics.
And, yeah, I just want to say quickly that I really agree with your assessment, and I remember talking to this woman who had moved from Arizona about her yoga studio and how friendly it was being in a smaller place, you know, and it wasn't sort of this airport feeling of in and out that it can feel like at many places. And what struck me when the guy who was working on a dating site asked, you know, what should it be? And I don't know exactly what it should be, but something that includes in-person meetups that would have those cis-like qualities, because I've thought about working on dating sites, but I just don't want to contribute to that trend without all the in-person connection that's really needed.
Yeah, because what I've seen is a lot of more social anxiety, right? So even if it's like, I know there's somewhere to go, can I really do it, especially if I have to go by myself? So
right.
That's another piece.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I feel really terrible, but I'm getting the side eye, the Commonwealth Club side eye, that we are actually out of time for questions, and I feel really bad for the people who have questions. However, we do have an after party at Eve, so come and bring your questions, because we've got some awesome stuff there. I have a closing that you guys are going to want to stick around for, where I'm going to ask each one of these people how they're going to save the world. But first, what I want to say is, as a reminder to our audience, this program is presented by the Commonwealth Club's Inforum Division. Tonight, we've hosted the State of Sex and Dating in SF with Ethan Waters, Sasha Kagan, Nicole Dedone, and N.W. Smith. And it is the newly founded Inform tradition of 2011 that we are asking all of our speakers the following question. And I've been told you have a minute to answer. Ethan, Sasha, Nicole, and N.W., what are your 60-second ideas to change the world?
So I think there's some fascinating new research that's coming out of the world of psychology that suggests that the human mind and the reason humans have been so successful around the world has not been because we have big brains that can solve complex problems. It's rather because we have brains that are designed to manifest the culture around us. That is, we mimic each other and we play out our roles. We don't learn from each other so much as we just mimic each other, and that's how we actually manifest the evolved knowledge that's within our culture. And I think that's a new way of thinking about the human mind, that we are better mimics than we are learners. And it suggests that we are, as I said before, sort of drifting on a tide of culture that we're out of sight of land and we can't perceive the movement. It just feels like it's all around us. And we get told messages from our culture. And I think it's only by looking cross-culturally or looking across history that we can sort of shake ourselves out of that cultural trance that we're in and see that people at different times and in different places view themselves much differently. They have different mating habits. They think of themselves differently. You do not have to buy the story that your culture is telling you about your generation. And I think the story that the culture has told us largely about our generation and the marriage delay is that we are a generation filled with anxious and lonely people, that we don't know how to manifest an adult life. And I think those are stories that come out of the anxiety that exists when we have so much change so quickly. But that's not the truth of our generation. The truth of our generation is that we're really doing remarkable things with this time. Mm-hmm. In particular, women are doing amazing things with this new marriage delay.
Ethan.
And I think that we can learn to tell that story as opposed to manifest the story that's told to us.
Thank you.
Mine is quite practical and twofold. We should reduce the working hours to 20 hours per week. And the rest of the time you're required to find passions and hobbies to engage you. And I think this will create more time for friendships and community and also finding the love of your life. And there should also be a forced month sabbatical, and people should be required to leave the United States. We're just talking about changing the United States, not the whole world.
Okay.
But yeah, that everyone has a month sabbatical and you have to leave.
So this is actually my question when I started my whole journey. And I was a teacher at San Francisco State, a graduate teaching associate, and they asked a question, what do you want to know about your sex? And, you know, I was this passionate young feminist, and I thought we had won, and we had sexual liberation. And it came back, and everyone said, what's wrong with me, basically? At this really fundamental, rooted part of human connection, we all felt wrong. And that was what set me off on this whole journey of exploration. And what I found is, you know, even in Tibetan Buddhism, orgasm is considered the moment of enlightenment. It's the moment when all of your ideas about how things are supposed to be fall away, and you actually experience another human being. You actually experience the world in raw connection. I don't know if you saw the movie Short Bus, but there's a woman who can't orgasm, and then at the end she has orgasm, and the power grid lights up. And I think that there is no better way to light up the power grid than with orgasm.
There you go.
I'm going to keep mine short and sweet.
You're good. It's a tough act to follow.
It's not very original, but I think Bill and Ted might have said it best when they said, be excellent to each other.
Yes.
And party on, dudes.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's give a big round of applause to the panel for sharing thoughts with us tonight. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club's Inform Division, Connect Your Intellect, is adjourned. Thank you.